This is Marketplace Weekend. I'm Lizzie O'Leary.
If you look at any list of the most expensive places to live in the United States, San Francisco and the Bay Area in general are almost always near the top. And it turns out this high cost of housing is changing the lives of urban Native Americans in the area. Reporter Jamie Noisecat wrote about this issue for High Country News. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
You start your piece by introducing us to Joe Wakazoo. Can you tell me a little bit about him and what his story is?
Joe is a figure from my childhood, really. I'm a native person who grew up in Oakland, California. Oakland has a very storied native community and native history. There was a program in 1952 called the Federal Urban Indian Relocation Program, and so a number of Native families were moved from reservations to cities, and Oakland was one of the cities where they ended up. And Joe was a character in that community. His mother, who we all just called Grandma Wakazoo or just Grandma, was kind of a matriarch in the community. She was, you know, an OG of the American Indian movement. And Joe would always come to the Thursday night drum and dance practices at the Intertribal Friendship House on International Boulevard in East Oakland. And I, as a young kid, you know, learning how to do our traditional dances, et cetera, would watch Joe and learn a lot of my my first dance moves watching him at dance practice. So I knew him growing up, and so that was a really, you know, big connection. And part of the story is that this is a family that you know, is big in the community and that I've known for pretty much my whole life.
There are a lot of stories written about gentrification in the Bay Area, but you were looking specifically at Native people and really this sort of what had happened to a lot of the families who were moved there in this program that you talked about. What happened to Joe?
So Joe became homeless in October of 2016. He had fallen on hard times that really actually began more with loved ones and family. So his partner of a couple decades, Jennifer, passed away in 2013, and he fell into a deep depression, and he, you know, struggled to find work. He was getting older, and eventually he was sharing a Section 8 apartment with his daughter Phyllis, and, you know, one thing led to another, and they kind of fell apart, and he moved out and onto the streets. So although he, you know, has lived in a sort of state of housing insecurity for, you know, decades, this was really his first trip into homelessness.
From your reporting, how do you think the Native experience in terms of gentrification differs, or does it, from, you know, stories we hear about other big, rapidly expanding, rapidly gentrifying cities like San Francisco, Oakland, New York, et cetera?
Yeah, so I think that there's a way in which we talk about housing and the story of the housing crisis that on the one hand really emphasizes particular, you know, winners and losers. So winners being developers and losers being communities of color, working class people, et cetera. But what often falls out of that narrative is Native communities. And the reality is that 7 in 10 Native people, or 3.7 million people, actually live in cities. So we are a primarily urban demographic. There's 66,000 of us in the Bay Area alone. So we are by no means a marginal or unimportant demographic. And because, you know, we often live in some of the deepest poverty found in the United States, we are often also the first and hardest impacted by issues of housing insecurity and displacement. Yet in this big narrative of gentrification, because we have these notions of Native people as stuck in the past or living in far off distant reservations, that story doesn't include us, which I find to be quite ironic and incorrect. Because if you look at the story of the United States from its inception, it has been a story of displacement and housing insecurity and outright theft of the indigenous home. And so if you include Native people back in the narrative, I think the narrative changes quite a bit.
You also touch on this in your piece, and the idea that, okay, well, if someone is priced out, and this is an argument we hear a lot, well, just move, which, of course, you know, has a lot of barriers to it when you're talking about kind of the economics involved in moving. But when you're talking about Native people, there is also the question of what housing and housing security is like on reservations and in what I think in the popular imagination is thought of as Indian country.
Absolutely. And so the story sort of, you know, if Joe were to decide to leave Oakland, which he's considered that, but he feels very much like Oakland is home and that's where he's going to stay for now. His option would be to maybe return home to the reservation. He has extended family on the Navajo Nation in New Mexico, in what's called the sort of checkerboard area of the Navajo Nation. But if he were to move from Oakland, he actually would just be trading one form of survival, one housing crisis, for another. Because on Indian reservations, there was an Obama-era study that found that there was need for 68,000 new units of housing. 68,000 units. That's comparable, if you were to look at other cities with big housing plans, to what's called for in New York City's 10-year housing plan. So there is an enormous need in these communities for housing. And so when Native families decide to pick up and leave from the city to the reservation, it's not like you know, their circumstances are getting any better or the social safety net is widening in any way. They're just really trading one form of survival for another.
When we look at housing and affordable housing, are there any moves on a policy level that might change the picture for those, you know, 68,000 units or in urban areas?
Unfortunately, in the Trump era, the only policies that seem to be moving are ones that could greater hurt the families like the Wakazoos. So the Trump administration has proposed $150 million in cuts to what are called Indian Housing Block Grants, which are the block grant funding through HUD that pays for housing on reservations in an Indian country. And to put that in perspective, the block grants that existed before the Trump administration took office actually had not grown since their implementation in 1996. So at the same time as inflation happened and as the Native population became one of the fastest growing in the United States, the funding to build homes for those people did not change. So in effect, it actually became a smaller pot. And now we have a proposal for cuts, which could be truly devastating for Indian country. And on the other hand, in cities, you know, I actually worked for the New York City Housing Department, and the problem of displacement is really a tough nut to crack, which is another, you know, aspect of the story is that what do we understand to be displacement, and what sort of proposals might we need to put in place to keep people in their historic communities? And you know, I don't think that what I've reported or written aims to any sort of direct policy suggestions, but I do think that if we were simply to respect the notion that people, and especially Native people as the first people of this land, deserve the dignity of maintaining their home, I think that we would start looking at these problems in a much different way.
Julian Noisecat, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.